Guys, so we're back one more time with another podcast. Thanks so much for joining me again. I really appreciate that. Today we're going to be talking about the different types of tools that you can use in your practice and on your altar and what those represent and mean. Now for some of you this might be a refresher course. You might already know. For some of you it might be something that you haven't really thought about but because you're just starting your practice. So either way, this is a very basic and beginner's episode, but I think that it's always important to go back and refresh ourselves and go over our knowledge so that we have it in our heads ready to use at a moment's notice. So just to jump right on in, I guess one of the first tools that we'll talk about today is the athame. It's one of the most popular ones, I think, when people think about witches. It's right up there next to broomsticks. So the athame is a double-sided blade that many of us use inside our spell work or inside our circles, rituals, things like that. It, like I said, is a double-sided blade that usually has a wooden handle, but that's not always necessary. It depends upon your practice and your tradition as to what exactly your athame is going to look like. Mine has a black handle and is double-sided. It has some special inscriptions on it, which I'm actually oath-bound not to tell you about. Super secret, I know. And it is, an athame is a representation of the element of fire. So when we think about fire, we think about that power behind it, that warmth, that energy. And when we're using our athame, what we're doing is we're taking that idea of that warmth, the energy, and all of it, and we're directing our power either to cast a circle or to draw energy inward during our rituals. So next would be our wand. So when we have a wand, it can be a multitude of different things. There are certain types of woods that are more akin to be used for a wand than others. And we will actually have an episode, because you guys know I love my trees. I will do an episode on tree magic and how to use trees in your spell work as well soon. But for today, with the wand, it just has to be and it doesn't actually have to always be a wooden one. In my tradition, it is a wooden one, but it's something that, again, we use to kind of direct our power, to direct our energy, and it is a representation of the element of air. And you can handcraft your wand if it's something that you feel drawn to. You can purchase your wand if it's something that you think will make your life a little easier, because, you know, we only have so much time in the day. Either way is fine. There's no wrong or right in regards to that. Same with the athame. I do not know how to do metalworking, so I went and I bought mine. And I love it. It's my fun little athame that I carry with me. So going from the athame to the wand, we're then looking at the chalice. The chalice is something, is a ornamental cup that you would keep on your altar, that you would put either sacred wine or some sort of special drink that you had for your ritual. And of course, as we can guess, the chalice, which is a cup, represents water. And again, it can be as ornate or as plain as you are interested in. It can be handcrafted or purchased. It kind of reminds me of that scene in Indiana Jones when he's trying to find the chalice of life. And, you know, he's like, oh, this is the king for the cup for a king. And then the Indiana goes, no, this is a cup of a carpenter. So it should be a cup that's reflective of you and your practice. And again, so the chalice is a representation of water in regards to that. And then we will get to the pentacle, which is a representation of the five different elements and is used in spell work. And it's sort of like a way of, so how to explain this? It's in ceremonial magic, the pentacle is used as a protective talisman. So it would be a way to kind of protect yourself, harness your energy, store your energy for if you need it later. You are more than welcome to make your own. They can be made of wood, metal, clay, anything that really resonates with you. And then it's inscribed with the pentagram, which is the five-pointed star. So that's why there's some of that confusion that happens between the pentagram and the pentacle. A pentagram is the five-pointed star, and the pentacle is a five-pointed star encased in a circle. So the pentacle represents earth. So if we take a quick stop here and we look back, Between the athame, which represents fire, the wand, which represents air, the chalice, which represents water, and the pentacle, which represents earth, we have successfully included 4 of the 5 major elements. Now, what is the fifth? Well, the fifth is you. So you are the spirit, you are the magic that is being brought into the circle. So don't never forget that. So those are the 4 main ones that we're looking at when we look at to set up an altar or to really start to create some ceremonial magic. And if you don't have all of these, that's fine. There's nothing that says that you have to go out and spend your life savings to meet, you know, a certain magical quota, I guess. There are some altars that are ornate to a fault, I guess. They're decorated, highly, highly decorated, tons of statuary, crystals everywhere, special cloths laid out, special all the things. And then there are other altars that are simply on the earth, on the ground, and both are valid. Both are wonderful ways of expressing your love and divination, love and devotion to the gods and the goddesses. The most important thing is that we are being honest and acknowledging that we are practicing, that we are opening ourselves up to the gods and the goddesses, and that we are there for them as they are there for us. So those are the 4 main ones, like I said, and then from there you can build up your altar with other things as well, should you choose to. One of the wonderful things that you could have in, as a working tool, either on your altar or on yourself, is a bowline. Now, a bolan is a white-handled knife with a curved blade, very representative of like a crescent moon. This is different than the athame, whereas the athame is for ceremonial magic and it's not something that you would really use for cutting or anything like that. The bolan is a special knife that would be used for harvesting, cutting herbs, and things like that. And then we get into other things like a censer or incense. And that's something that you would use to safely burn incense during your ceremony, during your ritual. And it's important to have something like that because you don't want to have to stop your ritual halfway through because there's a fire that you didn't intend to have. So always make sure that if you are going to burn incense in a ritual that you have a fire-safe dish or a censer to put the incense in to keep it safe. And then depending upon your practice, very common in British traditions is I'm going to say this wrong and I apologize, is a singulum, which is a 9-foot cord. And depending upon where you are in your tradition, what tradition you practice, this 9-foot cord would be handcrafted, braided, maybe straight, one of those two. The 9 feet represents the circumference of the circle that you would cast. So it's a very practical tool that you would use so that you would be able to set up a proper size circle for casting and for your ritual. It is usually worn around the waist during the ceremony, and it is not something that like you would put as, I don't know, let's say part of your Halloween costume, or that you would wear like on a Tuesday night to go get drinks with the girls. It is a special ceremonial piece of clothing that you keep on you for this particular use of, one, probably keeping your robe on, and two, to help be able to cast a proper size circle. And then some witches also include a besom, or a besom, depending upon how you pronounce it, and that's a broom, a handcrafted broom made of particular types of wood. I know that ash is usually used for the handle, and that willow is usually used for the sweeper end of it. Bristles, that's what they're called. So ash and willow are traditionally used. They're not the only option, though. You can use many other different types of wood. And what you would do is you would use that besom or besom to sweep the circle, to remove the negativity of the space before you started casting magic. So you would, some people go around 3 times, some people go around once, some people go before the ceremony, some people go during ceremony. So it depends. But a besom is something that you can use in your practice and you can have in your home and use it when you're practicing to set up your ritual space. And then, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the lovely cauldron, which also is an element of fire and also earth? No, water. So it's an interesting one because it carries water, but it also carries fire. We're using a cauldron in my practice. We're normally using it to contain fire. So that's what I always associate it with, is the fire symbol. And it's good to have a decent sized cauldron if you are going to practice more of the fire festival Sabbats that we've been talking about. Because you might not be able to light a complete bonfire, but you could have a small fire within your cauldron as long as you do the precautionary steps and make sure that it's fire safe. So then from there, we're also looking at what's called a stang or a staff. Staff is actually representative of male energy and is usually the element of air. Although some traditions it symbolizes fire, but you know, so there's a little murkiness in there sometimes. So the staff can be made by yourself. You just find a piece of wood that's or a long branch that fell off a tree. Please don't go cutting down trees for this. Find the ones that the trees have already offered you on the ground, I guess. A size that's comfortable for you, and then you can decorate it, sand it, make it colorful, all whatever floats your fancy. And then it is your staff. In some traditions, only the high priest and high priestess have a staff. In other traditions, anyone's allowed to have one. So it really is about, you know, knowing what you have to have on you is great, but you need to do the groundwork to know what is appropriate for what you are practicing. What is your tradition? What are the guidelines that have been set forth? I know that in my tradition, we're all allowed to have a staff. I just haven't had time to make one. Someone asked me if I was a bad witch or a good witch. I said neither. I'm a lazy witch. Other things that are more on the practical side to have is so one is a bell, and this might sound a little funny, but it's a great way to clear the air to really open up the space. When you ring that bell, you're signaling something within your mindset that says, yes, I am in circle, I am in practice, this is my ritual, this is what I am doing. So having a bell nearby, ringing it when you're getting started, ringing it when you're casting a spell, ringing it when you're done, is really something that can be very helpful for you to help set the mindset, like I said. Something else, you know, candles, all of that, consecrated anointed candles, and we'll talk about that in a second. How to consecrate and bring your tools into your altar space. So candles are very important for many different things. One, they set the mood. Let's not lie. That's a great reason. Two, they represent fire. And three, they're great ways to kind of set the boundaries of your magical space. It adds a little bit of extra strength, protection. We think about fire, we think about warmth, protection, things like that. So that's the basic rundown of the tools that I would have on hand if you're going to be doing ceremonial magic or rituals or things like that. What we want to make sure we're doing is consecrating these tools. Now, there's many different practices in regards to this about consecration and how to do it and what's the best way to do it. I don't think that there's one particular right way or wrong way. I think it's the intention that you're putting behind it that's the most important part. Ideally, what you're trying to do when you're consecrating a tool or a jewelry or anything that you're bringing to the altar space is that you're laying claim to it. You're claiming ownership to it, and that you are charging it with the protection powers or the powers of the elements that you're really looking to bring into that object. There are many different rituals or ceremonies out there that you can find on the internet about how to consecrate an object for your altar. I think the most important thing to remember is that you understand what each object is supposed to represent. So if we go back to the beginning and we're talking about those four major items that you bring to your altar, the athame, wand, chalice, pentacle, that each one of those has a representation of fire, air, water, and earth, respectively. So if you are going to consecrate, say, an athame, you might want to have fire nearby. If you're going to do a wand, you might want to have some incense lit so that smoke can represent air. A chalice, water nearby to sprinkle over it to consecrate it with the power of water. For a pentacle, earth. Either dirt or salt would be a great option at this point. Once you've gathered all of those tools, the salt, incense, you know, fire, and water, what you're looking to do then is to cast some sort of circle or open up some sort of ceremony that says that I'm about to do something. You light the candles, the incense, take everything in that you want to consecrate into your hands, and then depending upon your tradition or what feels comfortable for you, you would ask each element or that might be representative of each element to you know, come in and imbue the item with that power. Once that's done, that tool is ready for use. So that means that if you have consecrated your athame, then that athame is ready for you to use in ritual. If you've consecrated something that you're going to be using outside, like say a piece of jewelry or an article of clothing, a necklace, anything like that, that is then to be worn and ready for you to use on your daily practices or your daily life. So some people sometimes confuse consecrating with cleansing and or charging. So cleansing is to spiritually and energetically cleanse an item. And what you're doing is you are removing all energy from it. You're setting it to zero and then you're going forward with it. Cleansing is usually done with smoke or the moonlight, things like that. So what, like when you buy, say you go to a witch store and you buy, or any store really, and you buy crystals or things like that, you don't know where they came from. You don't know how they got there. Hopefully it was ethically sourced. Hopefully all good intentions, all good vibes, but that's not always the case in our society, unfortunately. So to cleanse something brings it down to zero. When you are charging an item, you are empowering it with an energy. You're imbuing the item with positive energy and aligning those energies for a specific purpose. It's very similar to charging is very similar to consecrating, but you can do it at any time. You can just chant, meditate to raise the power. You can pour that energy into your item, rub your item with an oil, all of that stuff. Some items don't need to be cleansed. If, like, I always think it's a good idea anyway, because like I said, you don't know where most of our things are coming from these days, and you don't really want to bring any negative energy into your home. So charging is always a good idea for, like, if you bought a new jewelry or something that you might not be using in ritual, but you have a piece of jewelry that you like, you might want to charge it. Charge it with positive energy, charge it with the intention of, you know, Venus for love or something like that, or Jupiter for career, anything like that. And then consecrating, like we talked about, is bringing in the elements to really bring that down to your magical practice. I hope all that made sense. If you guys have any questions about anything, please feel free to drop me a note either on the Facebook page, New Moon Mom. Just to recap really quickly, cleansing can be done at any time. Charging can be done at any time. Consecration should be done inside circle during full moon. That's the way that you're really drawing in those elemental powers into those items for your altar. Oh, and I almost forgot. I might have mentioned it quickly, but to have your book of shadows inside your circle while you're working is a wonderful tool to have on your altar. For those of you who don't know, a book of shadows is a place, a book that you write down your rituals, your beliefs, all that stuff, spells, anything that pertains to your craft, you would write down and would be part of your book of shadows. I can tell you on numerous occasions I have had to reference while in ceremony my book of shadows to know what I was supposed to say next. I am still learning. Everyone is always still learning. So we do have to give ourselves that little bit of flexibility that we might not know everything, but as long as our intention is there, and I feel like I say that word every day, all the time, intention, intention, intention. Our intention is to honor the gods and goddesses and to show our reverence for them, but also keep the tradition alive in the sense that we are practicing as close to what we know to be the truth as we can. So I'm going to wrap it up there for now because I do have a couple other things to do today. As always, guys, thank you so much for joining me for this week's short but hopefully insightful episode. And as I say to my boys before I send them off into the world, be awesome, be good, be kind. Take care, guys, and I'll see you soon.